welcome to the Nightbird Radio Podcast. I'm Timothy Saylor, and I'm going to be your host this evening as we sound out the subconscious, navigate the nocturnal, and explore the farthest reaches of our experience. Coming at you from the back of an 86 Dodge Ram van on the rolling foothills of the Blue Ridge Mountains in the Great Forest, deep in the heart of the Kali Yuga. This is Radio for the Hauntological Turn. And welcome back, Nightbirds. It's great to have you back, and it's great to be back. On this episode, I'm joined by Tim Woody. Tim is a van vagabond, a big band composer, an ultra-distance backpacker, a mobile recording engineer, a fortune teller who plies his trade at www.cgfortunetelling.com, and a witch. Tim, how are you doing today?
I'm doing mighty fine, Tim. It is awesome to be here. Just a couple of Tims talking about crazy shit.
And a couple of vans.
Yeah.
You're in a van right now yourself. Where are you at?
I'm in Oregon, just a little ways south of Portland, near the lovely town of Eugene, other side of the other mountains of the country. So where you're holding it down in Blue Ridge, and I'm kind of just past the Siskiyou, the North Cascades.
Very nice. They remind me of each other a little bit. Not the Cascades, but when I was in Eugene, I can't remember the name of the, it's like another very round, low, hilly sort of mountain range. I'm probably doing a terrible job at explaining it, but it was Appalachian style to me. It was like, this seems old.
Yeah. Like maybe it was up in the like Willamette, Willamette National Forest or I'm trying to think what I've only gotten to go out into the mountains east of Eugene once since being up here. I forget what the
from the window of a car, so
okay. the foothills though, right? Because like a mountain out here is not exactly the same thing as a mountain back east, but the way that the land will taper and rise up towards the crowning glory of a massive snow-capped peak. I agree. It has that feeling of being in the high pine forest, you know, where there's a pine straw floor and pine cones everywhere. You know, raptors like it very, it does remind me of home. In that way. Oh, I should mention for folks who don't know, my family comes from the mountains of Western North Carolina, which is just a couple hours by road from the Blue Ridge of Georgia, and it's part of the same mountain range. So I can also enjoy making that comparison,
which is also a mountain range that's been around since what, like before Pangaea, right? Like it's the same mountain range. It's the central Pangean. I mean, you know.
Yeah, we'll be
in
much of it. Yeah, like, well, okay, so you can tell when you look at the entire stretch of the Appalachian Mountains. I say Appalachian. I refuse to say Appalachian. And as my friend Zach Russell says, if you say Appalachian, I'll throw an Appalachia. Or wait, I fucked it up. If you say Appalachian, I will throw an Appalachia. Damn it, I messed it up. But the Appalachians extend down into Georgia. I think they actually might go down south from the tip of Florida underwater. And then they extend from Maine all the way up to like Newfoundland. And they actually go under the ocean and come back out in Greenland. So, I mean, that has certainly the feeling of being an old continental range, right? That's been largely submerged and interrupted by continental shift. So it is a lot older than these huge mountains out here, out west, and that accounts largely for the size difference. The Appalachians have been around so long; they've been slowly whittled down into the sort of handcrafted craggy peaks that they are now.
I love it. And you've hiked the Appalachian Trail yourself?
I did, yeah. So I hiked the AT in 2015. I hiked the Pacific Crest Trail in 2017, and that was before driving out west. That was the last time I had been out here. That's not technically true, but it might as well be true. And then I did the Long Trail in Vermont in 2022.
Vermont's beautiful.
It's a gorgeous, gorgeous state, especially the great Northern Kingdom. Kind of up in that northeast corner of the state. I've only gone to see a little bit of it. The Long Trail just kind of skirts the edge of the Northern Kingdom. But yeah, I mean the closer you get to the border, to the Canadian border, the more magnificent Vermont is. And at the 45th parallel in particular, which is at the very end of the trail.
Very nice. Yeah, there's I just when I heard that the first time, I think it wasn't too long ago, about, because on the other side, and correct me if I'm wrong, because you obviously know more about it than I do, but like apparently on the other side of the fault that goes under the ocean, the mountains going through like the Scottish Highlands and some of Russia and some of like Scandinavia, aren't they like, weren't they like back in the day, like all the same range?
I believe so, yeah.
And so it's
Yeah.
interesting to me that like you have a very similar kind of fairy lore, and obviously, people immigrated and brought those stories as well. But it's just strange how things sort of rhyme and echo across time and across distance.
Yeah, that there's something about the place. Place calls to place, and maybe that's part of what prompted that sort of idea immigration, idea import of that sort. That like, I mean, the Scottish people who settled, or the Scots and the Scotch Irish who settled in the Southern Appalachians. They came from the Scottish Highlands, and so there's something that was just like made already to mesh together. And so it's like, yeah, on the one hand you could say that they applied a mountain people's mythology and practice and traditions to another mountainous range as an import, but it is also possible that the mountain spirits who were already there in the New World's mountain range were willing to kind of accept them into the fold because they already had this sort of plug and play familiarity with them.
I like the idea of plug and play. That's interesting. Yeah. Yeah, it's like, oh, you hang out with my cousin. I
Exactly,
know
yeah.
you.
Well, or it's like, it's like a trope from, I'm trying to think of a movie it's in, but it's that kind of trope of like an adventure film where you roll up on the only outpost for 100 miles around, and you go up to the hostelry to get your horse tended to, and there's a little guy there with a hat. With a red hat and a blue shirt, and he takes care of your horse. And you go over to the bar, and a door slams in the back. And it's the same little guy who comes out. And he's wearing a blue shirt and a yellow hat. And he's like, "Oh, here, yeah. Would you like a drink?" And you're like, "You know what? I think I'm good. I'm just going to go find a room." And you go over to the hotel, and sure enough, door slams in the back, and out comes guy in the blue shirt. And he's got a sombrero. And he's like, "Yeah, cool. Would you like to get a room?" It's not quite as it's not quite as trite as that, and it's hard to say. It's like I wouldn't want to overstate the identity of these kinds of mountain spirits on opposite sides of the ocean, but it does make you wonder if there is some larger spirit that co-inhabits them, and it's just waiting for you to show up to
Yeah.
kind of put the hat on.
I think that's a really interesting way to put it. and it brings some interesting things to mind. The idea of it waiting for you to show up to put the hat on is kind of like the observer, like that quantum shit, man. Like that dual slit experiment. Like it once the observer becomes involved, like, and I, dude, I, this is not even a big model for me, but it's just that's what I thought of, right? Like it's not like it's kind of in a state of chaos. Like maybe this spirit is in more of a state of chaos until it interfaces with this flesh in that way, you know?
That's a good point. I enjoy the idea of that your word, that your presence, that you're seeking the contact calls it into a form. I
And I
think that
think that,
is
go ahead, sorry.
so go ahead, man.
Not
We're
what? Get
after
used
you, good
to
sir.
it. Well, you know, we say that in magic. We say appear to a form in a form that's pleasing to me.
Exactly. It's the same. I was kind of thinking the same thing that like when you're doing angel magic, calling the angel into a stone, or calling the angel into a mirror, or just calling the angel into appearance. I mean, that there's a sense that there's a projection that always happens, especially when you're talking about when we're working with this sort of Solomonic spectrum, and there's that Sephirotic kind of thing going on. That like, yeah, there's always this thing about projections and having to be projected down from an upper level of dimensionality into a lower level of the tree, or whatever. But then also there's a sense of like the spirit projecting into mist, right? Or into light or something, projecting itself into some discernible thing or projecting itself into the mind. And so like in that sense, I mean, certainly for the angels, you get the sense that, I mean, like, talk to 10 people who have seen the Archangel Michael, and one of them saw a boy like a nubile like athlete with silver wings, and somebody saw like a transformer, somebody saw like a fucking blue dragonfly. So like, yeah, I don't know. It's like, are those forms pre-contained in a sort of a chaotic maelstrom that the entity maintains? Hands, or are those forms presented by us to them when we call them to appear, or something else,
Yeah,
secret
something
third
even
option.
secret third option, something even stranger, probably, right? Like I'm like, how does that being appear to a squirrel, you know?
Nice. Yeah, I love that. I mean, it's the same thing with how like I feel like people notice it the most with cats. Certainly, people like we will notice it with dogs, but with cats, they frequently appear to be interacting with invisible things.
Yeah.
And so, you're like, I wonder. Yeah, I just wonder. I mean, it's like because if you have the tools, you can find out what spirits might be drifting through and interacting with your cat. But you don't get to know what the cat sees. And I always wonder if the cat thinks that there are like 12 humans in the house. Or if, I mean, I feel like the cat can probably tell the difference between a flesh and blood mortal and a spirit, but
I mean, but there's a spirit in there, you know, like you got, there's a
yeah.
spirit in there somewhere. So it's like, yeah,
Right.
I'm sure they can tell the difference too, but at some point it's like, what's the finger and what's the hand, you know, like, and that's the way I kind of like the best way for me at least to kind of, to think with oversouls, you know, like, cause it always comes back to that for me. It's like, okay, is like, sure, you have syncretism between these gods, but then at the same time, like if you look at PGM magic, they're calling all the versions of that one god, like at
At the
one
same
time,
time,
at the same time, or the goddess, you know? And they're like, I was just talking about this with the episode's not out yet, but it'll be out by the time this is released. With Sharif Clark. About it's like and the way he put it was I really liked it. He was like, it's like you're CCing all these people to the same email, you know, like I'm calling Ion, I'm calling Yao, I'm calling the Agatho Diamond, like CC CC CC, and Yeah, it's almost like it's like going up the ladder or something of the whole lineage of the spirit. Because
Yeah.
there is some origin point. I don't know what it is, but it seems
Yeah.
to be that they're connected somewhere.
Right. Yeah. Like if it, whether it's an apex or a through line, it's like hard to say. It makes me think of a few weeks ago. So yeah, you just had Ivy Bromius on the show. So a few weeks ago, I got to take part in a really awesome Hecate working with her and Danny Nemo and some other awesome witches in the area here. And we were doing some work on the evocation, and just we're going through this long list of appellations of Hecate. And one of them that Ivy found was actually, I don't know, Ivy or Danny found this one that was she who wears golden laced sandals and drinks red wine by the well. It's
Awesome,
like,
dude.
right? Like, and the thing that I enjoy the most about it is not just the bizarre specificity with no apparent divine qualities, but it's the fact that that is then attributed to the one of the to the like the biggest goddess of that paradigm. So like it makes you wonder, was there some Grecian village where every time they'd go down to the well, here's this goddess wearing her gold sandals and drinking wine. And they're like, "Who are you?" And she's like, "Oh, I'm the old mother." And like, okay, add it to the book. So like, I don't know. I enjoy that. Like, I think that secret third option for whether it's top down or a through line would be the holographic or the fractal description, in which even this most mundane expression of the goddess is the entirety of the goddess, within the sandals.
Yeah, I love that. That's beautiful. I really like, I've never heard that one. I think, and I maybe I did because they did a repeat of it that I got was blessed to be able to participate in. And
Oh yeah.
yeah, that was done online. So I can't imagine what that was like in person because it was powerful.
Oh, I heard the online one was yeah, I heard it was super. I think they were both very powerful. It was a great working. Hecate has intentions. I mean, like, she's always had intentions, but apparently she's moving at the moment, and it seems like a bunch of people are getting kind of katamari'd up into the Hecate ball.
Yeah, man, it's cool to see, and it's definitely something I've noticed too. Because I wasn't really looking
Yeah.
at all, and it's really interesting, because like I was actually at this point where I was like, I need to stop Pokemoning all the
Right,
spirits,
collecting.
and I need to like
Yeah.
kind of discard and simplify and get really laser focused. And then she showed up. She showed up in a dream of mine. And I was like, okay, well, I guess we're going this way,
Yeah.
like,
I guess I can take one more.
yeah, right. And like, well, because that's the thing too. It's like, it's hard to even put into words because there are some spirits that just, when you meet a person and you're like, I've known you before
Yeah.
in another life or something. There are some spirits like that too, right? And I mean, shit, who knows? Maybe all of them, you know what I mean? But like,
Right.
there are certainly ones that are like, okay, like, yeah, we have business and I can just tell. But
Yeah,
I didn't know
right.
that. I didn't know that.
It's so bizarre how quickly you can go from complete ignorance of your connection to a goddess to being wholly absorbed into her sphere.
Yeah,
Like,
man.
it's wild. I think that there's a sense of like, we've been waiting for you. You're super late, but thank you for
Yeah.
finally showing up to our meeting.
Yeah, I like that.
Yeah, for me, Hecate, I got I got sort of first I got pulled into the Babylon phenomenon, and I was given some very good advice to let Hecate have some to let Hecate do some work with me before diving down that one, which I think is probably a sensible way to approach some of the more fiery and chthonic spirits to get a solid basis and in some of that more neutral mother wild spirit kind of stuff.
Yeah. It's been a wild ride for me so far. Just like a lot of progress really fast. And just like to the point where I'm like, was I even really like doing? Like I feel like I was in the, I might have said this before, but I feel like I was in the kiddie pool. You know, like all before this. And there's a lot there. To unpack, obviously, but like, because I've been doing this for like 5 years or so. It's not too long. I feel like I said to you over text conversation, like I'm a tadpole in this game still. You know what I mean?
Yeah, we're right.
But.
Yeah, totally. Yeah, no, I feel that too. I mean, it's you were saying a minute ago about how you've been shifting out of the Pokemoning thing, and like I feel at times like I feel at times like I'm like as a tadpole, that's actually part of why I have why it's made more sense for me to like, focus on working with ancestors, focus on working with the spirits who have volunteered themselves to me. And yeah, from there it's like they call you.
Yeah,
The
definitely.
and just to like in part to keep it simple, but also to let it be natural. You know what I mean? Like to get to the point where it's like a lot of the time people will ask me what magic I'm doing, and I'll be like, oh, I haven't really, done magic in a minute. And then I'm like, well, actually, if I think about it, I started my day the same way I do every day, which is with magic. So like, it's just I just don't even think you don't think of it as magic anymore. You think of it as just what's natural. You think of it as relating to your sphere, to your spirit sphere.
Yeah, it becomes effortless. It becomes a flow. Yeah. Yeah. And then there's sometimes when I'm like, nah, bro, I've been blasting the fuck out of some magic, you know? But it's funny because that's kind of the way it worked with Kate, right? Because I was like, oh, I've never really ever done anything with her. I've never done anything even in that vein. And so I don't know where this is coming from. But then I'm like, I think back and I'm like, no, that's not really true. Because I've been doing a bunch of PGM stuff for a long time and I've been doing this Greek stuff and like it's like all kind of connected. So I can see back in a through line where like actually and then like, I called on her for some stuff like way before I knew anything of what I was doing, just because it was like, oh, that looks good. That like Orphic hymn looks good. You know what I mean for this? And so it's like, oh, okay. Yeah. So I can look back and see the threads weaving into the tapestry.
Yeah, I think that's a really yeah, I think that's very cogently put. I mean, I've been thinking about with Hecate how and to some extent with Babylon as well, but as a, as a through hiker, as a backpacker, I've spent many, many nights deep in the wilderness and long days, hiking on the trail, drinking the water, getting breaking a sweat, getting nasty and filthy just from like being out there for so long, in her domain, you know what I mean? Like passing through Hecate's territory. And I mean, well, that was part of the thing with Babylon. Ever since I was a kid, ever since I was a good little conservative kid, I've loved stargazing, like just gazing on the night sky, which is Babylon's body. So like yeah, and like I mean, it's one thing to some extent. It's like, is it even a threat at that point? It's actually more that I've been swimming in this phenomenon without even being aware of it until I was given it a name. I think it's also, I mean, this is a little bit off of Hecate, but with the angels, if you've engaged in a certain amount of action and adventure sports, or taken a certain if you've taken risks at a certain scale, whether it was action adventure for fun or accident or whatever, there's a really, really good chance angels have swooped in to save your ass at some point, right? And so like looking back on those moments, I can see constellated around them phenomenon that I would not have at the time been able to identify as angelic. But afterwards, and having done angel stuff, I'm like, oh yeah, man, that's, I thought I met, Michael the first time I did a candle, or the first time I did this, contact, right? But really, Michael showed up to save my ass in the mountains like three times. And there were actual contact, events in that. I just didn't have the framework for it. So I just figured I was tripping or whatever. And I probably was also tripping. So like it does complicate things.
Yeah, as one does. Yeah, that's good. I like that a lot. I'm swimming in it. Yeah, I think all the time I am. And it's just a matter of if I can see or not. And I'm trying to get to where I can see more often than I'm not seeing. You know, like it's just a matter of kind of like dialing it in.
Yeah, dude. I think that's a finely attenuating, find the signal and boost it. Yeah, I like that.
Yeah. I did want to ask you about oh yeah, so okay, so speaking of like traversing Hecate's realm in the woods, how about traversing the road? Because I know we have had this conversation going, but I wanted to talk about this a little bit. Those road spirits and kind of being out there. What's your experience there? And how does that differ maybe from being on the trail?
Yeah, the first thing I'll say is the road is markedly different from being on trail. I think that one thing that there's one thing that's kind of jumped out at me. I'm just taking a moment to let it percolate there. Okay, so at the most fundamental level, at the most primary level, we'll say a trail is a snake, right? Is a serpent. A trail is a line is most times a linear sort of process. It to walk a trail is a linear traverse, right? Kurt Huggins, when I was on his and Rev's podcast a while back, he said this, the trail's a snake thing, which I just love. I love that. And the trail digests you, right? But you submit yourself to a linear process and you drift through it, and hopefully you see it to the end. So the road is not, I mean, the road might be a snake. It probably, well, I'm not saying the road is not a snake, but I'm saying it's a fucking tangle of snakes, right? It's a web. And to go out on the road is to feel the tremendous intersection and connectivity of distant places, right? And that's what largely what the road is for. And so like with the trail, yeah, you feel the connection, you feel the through line, but it's more like you are engaging with a bunch of small locales that are served by this snake. With the road, it feels more like road space and road time is somehow separate from conventional space and time. And even though you pass through locales, like driving I-40 through Arizona is one of those experiences where just like the magnificence of the place blossoms around you unexpectedly, and you feel more in the place where you are, right? But like a little bit farther east on I-40, where you're going through kind of the doldrums for a while, and
I
you're
avoid it.
you know you're yeah it's like it's It's not that bad, but once you see the nice parts of I-40 and you're like, oh God, I gotta drive through. Okay.
I hop down to 20, man. 20 is
okay.
Choice for me. I love it.
Okay. I'll have to pick that one up the next time I'm going across.
Yeah, basically I ditch before Little Rock.
Okay.
Yeah.
That seems like the way to do it. Yeah, I like exactly. Tennessee, the I-40 through Tennessee is great. The corridor, you got Knoxville, Nashville, Memphis. Memphis is great. But yeah, it's like, yeah, like after Memphis, you kind of got Little Rock, and then
partial to 20, though. You know what I mean? It's like the road home. Which
okay,
brings me to something that I wanted to bring up, too. The idea, like what you're talking about, like the connectivity between distant places, like being in that limine. And the idea that the road right outside of Bag End is the same road that stands at the gate of Mordor.
Yep.
And there's something about it that's like, you know, in the movie Event Horizon, this is a weird tangent, but, and have you seen that movie?
I believe I have.
Where he
is
describes,
it a,
it's like a sci-fi horror.
Yeah.
Where there's like a haunted spaceship that like ripped a, it's basically like the story from Warhammer 40K about how the warp was, came about. Anyway, so, but the idea that he explains, Sam Neill at the beginning of this movie is talking about like how, faster than light travel works. And he takes a piece of paper and he's got two dots on each side of the paper.
Yes.
Like, you know, you can go from point A to point B, or you can fold space and put point A and point B right at the same space. I feel like that's actually what the road does.
Yeah, totally. It's like in, it's fast travel, right? And like in an open world RPG, there's, and I mean, you know, it's like for the newer games, it's a little bit more seamless. It was more obvious in the old games that you would teleport up to an alternate zone, which would traverse you through the map of the game at a much, much faster pace because space has been compressed. It's like the best, I mean, this is not the best example, but it is an amusing and kind of, well, anyway, the early Super Mario games, right? Where it's the overworld in the Super Mario games where you get between the areas. But then it's also, you know, you've got like games where you travel underneath the city, like the Assassin's Creed franchise. This is something that we encounter, we're used to encountering it in the digital world. We're not used to recognizing that that is what the road, that the what the highway itself is. And I mean, so like, I guess there were two things I want to, I like there that I wanted to kind of hit on. One, relating to what you were saying about Bag End and Mordor are connected, like not connected in the navigational sense by this road, connected in the literal physical and also and spiritual sense as well by the road. And so let's see, I want to say a thing about that. I want to bookmark road time to come back to in a second. But the thing we were saying earlier about oversouls or a fractal nature to spirits and to classes of spirits, I feel like on the road, I experience this craving to encounter a wider span of space as a discrete entity. So like, for instance, right now, I look outside, I'm in this park, and I go out in the park, and I'm a witch, so I'm going to be like, spirit of the land, of some water, you know, I'll start relating to the spirit of the land who it's right for me to relate to in this spot. And you hang out with it, you get to know it, whatever. You start to wander, right? You walk up a trail, you enter to another park. You're like, hey, you know, spirit, is that still you? Is this the same? And you're like, yeah, it's maybe probably the same. Maybe there's a little bit of a shift. Another park 5 miles down the road, you assume it's a different land spirit. But when you start traversing space on the scale that we do with interstate travel, I feel this craving to experience larger spirits of place, to experience the locale and the spirit that holds it as being more expansive, less localized, or like poly-localized or something. And I think that's kind of what you're saying, that in through road logic, Mordor and Bagend are the same place, right? They're neighbors. And I haven't yet figured out exactly. There are some practical implications about that that I want to run down, you
Well, in
know?
the same way that the
But.
Prince of Darkness and the Lord of Light are but two faces of the same being, right? That are dancing.
Yeah. Right. Like Michael and the dragon, you know, counter penetrating each other and like being locked in this
Yeah.
revolving tangle. Yeah.
That sort of illusion of duality. Or maybe it's just an experience of duality that becomes, there's a discussion there. Obviously, we don't have to go down that road, but.
Yeah, nice. So I'm curious, and this is the thing about road time. Have you lost time on the road before?
Yeah, I think when I was out on the
Yeah.
road this past year, all I did was lose time, basically. I felt like
Yeah.
I
Right.
felt like it's interesting because actually that job is like you are either sitting there for very long periods of time. You might sit there for a day or two waiting on paperwork or something, right?
Right.
And then you're also traversing large areas, and that feels like you snapped your fingers and you're in another whole another side of the country, right? So it was
Yeah.
a really stark contrast. And yeah, I felt like it was all just lost time. Like I and not like in a way that I'm like lamenting it or anything, but
Yeah.
it's definitely like, oh shit, like it takes my breath away to even think about how fast a year went out there. And
Yeah.
on a micro level, like a day-to-day experience level, yeah, I mean there's that phenomenon of like going into kind of a trance state while driving, right?
Right.
Where it's like, for all intents and purposes, I got abducted. Because
Yeah, exactly.
I don't remember the time.
There's like either a blank space. So yeah, right. It will either be a blank space or, and this is the one that I experienced the most. And this happens a little bit on trail, but on the road it's much more pronounced where you're checking, yeah, you look at the map and you're like, oh God, I'm 40. I'm still 40 minutes out. You know, I gotta pee or whatever. And you close the map. You're like, I don't even want to think about this because if you've done this enough, you start to realize you can fuck with time this way. So you close down the map. You drive for 15 minutes. You open the map back up, and you're 5 minutes away, right? And like your lived experience of the time was 15 minutes. You can account for it, but it does not add up for the time that has been traversed. And of course, it does make you wonder if for part of that time I was like, oh. They can't see my face, but I'm, you know, just completely blanked out or
Yeah,
something.
like doing the Danny Torrance from The Shining deal.
Yeah, right.
You know?
Yep. All work and no play. Yeah.
Yeah. Just
Right.
going in that zone. Yeah.
So like what's interesting is on the trail, we call that a time warp, rather than thinking of it as an abduction because well, there are a couple of reasons for that. One of them is largely chemical, but the other reason is that like one of the most fundamental things about thru hiking, about hiking a long trail, is everything takes as long as it takes, right? Like there's not a lot of time compression except that sort of subjective time compression. But there have also been times where people showed up someplace way sooner than they should have. You know, it's like we all left before them. They left much later. We're all going to do the same distance. And they appeared in camp way sooner than they should have. And, you know, it's like, whatever. Not to say we're a bunch of terribly reliable witnesses to such an event, but that appears to be some sort of a. Yeah, it's like that could be some sort of a temporal psychological event. It could be some mode of spatial compression. I actually think that space gets folded up by the good neighbors rather frequently to kind of fuck with unworried humans. But sometimes the trail might be able to do that too. So like if that's the way it is on a dirt path in the woods where everything normally takes as long as it takes, but every now and then you can catch, I think of it as like catching a wind and you just drift through it and it doesn't take as long as it should. The road, I think, is made of that. And I'm reminded of the Dark Tower, Stephen King's Dark Tower,
Yeah,
where
love it.
Right, dude. So that's the thing. The Roland is on the road for so long that he comes untethered from time, and he passes through centuries as if they're nothing. And yeah, I mean, I feel that. I think that and it's probably hard to account for in the bean counting sort of sense. But I do think that's part of the way that time behaves on the road. And well, one last little word on this, and then I shall yield the floor. But like the to go back to Hobbit advice, what is it? I forget what he says. It's the it's a big world out there, and if you don't keep your feet, there's no telling where you can be swept off to. So like I a lot of the time as a van lifer and as a vagabond, I have felt because I've encountered van lifers who, for whatever reason, they have no destination, they have no purpose, and I'm not judging them. That's actually the situation that they've been given. And so they'll say like, I'm in the wind, I'm drifting. You gotta have purpose if you want to take the road. Like whatever the romance of being the actual drifter, the wanderer with no place to be, whatever the romance of that is, it is much, much better to be on the road with a purpose, with a mission, with a ring to carry, or with a place to go or a thing to make. 'Cause without it, the road devours people,
It
and it
will
will.
fucking eat you.
Yep. It'll drive you mad as well, and especially those temporal effects. I mean, it started to worry me that I had lost time in the gym a little while ago. I was like, oh no. Like it was like 20 seconds. Like I looked at the clock, I looked at my hand, I looked back at the clock, and I was like, what? Well, I say looked at my hand, I looked at my phone. So maybe that's what happened. Maybe the phone ate the time. But yeah, when you're on the road for that span, you're transforming yourself to work through that time. And it's really, really important to have things that continue to keep you tethered in to human time and human, processes and purposes.
Yeah, I saw that with a lot of truckers. And like some of these guys, like you'll talk to them at the truck stop and it's like being at a spaceport, dude. And like
Yeah,
these guys look
Mos
like they've
Eisley
been,
Cantina.
yeah, dude, they look like they've been on the outer rim, you know what I mean? Like they've just been out in space for so long that like they've got this wild, almost feral countenance. And like and this like kind of look in their eyes like they've gazed into the abyss, to
Totally.
be
Yeah.
honest.
Yeah, because they have.
Yeah.
I mean, it's the same thing with I've had the privilege of meeting some unbelievably prolific backpackers. I mean, I've done close to 5,000 cl I've done close to like 5,000 miles in the woods, probably. I've met people who've done 15 or more, and they're great people. Like I love those guys, and those ladies. Some of them though, you can tell. You can tell they got the void in them. Now it's better. I think it's better to be that guy than to be someone who gets eaten by the wilderness in the other way,
Oh, totally.
on trail or on the road, which is usually the old man of the road comes to collect because you've crossed him in some way.
That's interesting that you say that because I was going to bring up Odin.
Nice.
And the way that your pop filter was covering your eye when you said that made it look like an eye.
Right.
It looks like you're wearing an eye patch. You've got the beard. I'm like, yeah, I'm feeling it, right?
That's perfect. Yeah.
I think that that's another kind of, it's interesting that you mentioned like you've got to have a purpose, you've got to have a it's a good to have a mission. It's also good to have the Shire.
Yeah.
And so I'm going to end up talking about this on a lot of these episodes because it's just what I'm going through right now. So if I'm repeating myself, that is what it is. But there is, for me, there's been this experience of like I've been out gathering all this experience, all this information, all this wisdom, all these tidings, And like, there comes a time when I need to like go back to the Shire and integrate that, right? And that's been an interesting thing because on the road it's been all Odin, but then as soon as I come home, it's the goddess. And like she's at the hearth waiting for Odin. Like Freya is at the hearth waiting for Odin to return to bring his tidings so that she can show him how to put all that shit together and integrate it. And if I don't have that, and it doesn't have to be, it doesn't have to be like some set place as long as that place exists, like however it exists for you, right? Like,
Yeah,
I'm not saying you
exactly.
have to have a house or something, but like, and that's been a really interesting thing because like there was all like in that conversation I had with Ivy, I talked about this, but it was like there was all this magic I was doing and I felt like it was kind of around swirling in the air around me. And then immediately when I became sedentary again, it all just went like and
Like
shot
it
out.
became more directional or okay.
I don't know, it felt like it became unbunged. You know what I
Nice.
mean?
Yeah, I could see that, man. It had some had some stability for it to take a walk around instead of just kind of hanging up and like waiting for
Which is
that.
interesting that to hang up, because
Oh,
it's like
yes, there he is again.
there he is hanging on the tree, the hanged man. Like, and I've gotten that a lot in tarot readings too, funny enough. Like, yeah. So there's definitely something there for me, and that's kind of unfolding still. So, we'll see what comes of that. But
There's something I'm
no,
sorry to cut
please,
you off.
please cut me off. Yeah.
All right. So home is a fascinating concept that you start to think about a lot more after being on the road, as you well know. There's a novel by Thomas Wolfe. I've only read one of his novels. I liked it a lot, but he has another novel I've not yet read, titled "You Can't Go Home Again." And the title of that book is probably the most famous, enduringly famous thing about Thomas Wolfe. It's like about the needing a place where you can process what's happened and recognizing that that place will be tailored to that purpose. I think that there's an interesting thing that happens to long-term travelers that they believe that because they've gone home, that home will make itself available to them for that process, and like something I learned after the AT is that the trail never ends. And I thought, it's like, okay, I'm leaving home, I'll go walk this trail, I shall then return home, but probably I'll go someplace more interesting than what I had available to me. And you get back home and discover it's not the same place, right? You can't step in the same river twice. And often enough, because something about travel, or I mean, in particular, a trail with a linear process with an endpoint gives you this cardinality that for me, it was like I come home with all this stuff that's happened to me on the road or on the trail that I want to process. And home is like, we're not doing that right now. You've got a bunch of home shit to process, right? Or like, or you'll be fully engrossed in the drama of your home circle, of your social circle or your family circle. So for me, I feel like the ideal place to integrate is not the place I would think of as home, but the place where I can find that repose, right? It's not the Shire, but it is Rivendell, or it is,
Oh yeah, I like that.
like I'm Tom Bombadil's place, right? Like,
Yeah.
as a van lifer, I have a turn of phrase. I call it going to my room when I go to camp at the most remote place I can practically reach in an evening. Because like out there is where I feel the space to actually let go of the mission for a minute and just kind of look at all that's happened and feel it move through me. That being said, of course, Hecate being the mother in the wild, whether or not she has a hearth, though I believe she is a goddess of the hearth as well.
She has a
She's a goddess
torch.
of so many things. A torch, exactly, right. So there's still the fire and the warmth. That's where I think I find what you were describing. But it's also like, I mean, I haven't, I gave up my apartment and when I chose to do the van life thing, so I haven't had anything, like a home really since then. And even then, it was like, even when I had it, I didn't feel attached to it the same way other people I know feel attached to their homes. So like, for me, it's like it seems like everything that is necessary, can be found, but I find it. I usually have to travel to it, or I have to go out to find it rather than going back in.
That's interesting too, because the what you were talking about made me think of the fact that like when they try to return to the Shire, it's like burning.
Yeah, because fucking Saruman and Wormtongue have torched the place.
Yeah, so
Yeah.
that's interesting. And yeah, I like that, man. And I think that yeah, that makes good sense to me. And I also think that like, and this is in that corny way of like, baby, you're my home. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
Like that the goddess is home.
The ancestors are home
The
as
ancestors are
well.
home, and like we can carry that with us. That's a good point.
Yeah, dude, it's good turtle magic as
Turtle
well.
magic, dude. Yes, definitely. And I think, that's interesting too, because now it's got me also thinking about Odin again and the fact that like the reason he has 100 names is because every time he comes home he's different.
Nice, yeah.
You know, like
Right, he's picked
we
up a
can
new
come like
epithet.
right, like I can come back to the same place, but I'm not going to be the same. That's why I really can't come home because I will never like it's all in flux all the time. It, like that was one of the things that dude, when I would be driving on the road, I would have start to think about how the wheels that are touching the road are slowly disintegrating. The road itself is slowly disintegrating. The grass all around me is growing and blooming and dying and turning back into dirt. The dirt is blowing in the wind and becoming new land. Like it really puts you in touch with and like that airy idea of flux and change being the only thing that's constant.
Yeah, totally. And then, though, it's interesting because oftentimes that process itself and in encountering it, you will brush up against things that have a sense of permanence. That have a sense of permanence. The Grand Canyon is a fascinating example. Like I was at the Grand, when I was there back in January, I had this moment where I was watching the shadows lengthen, and I realized that the shadow that this interesting shadow that was cast by a rocky, spire. I was like, that shadow is millions of years old, right? Like, but it's not. It's brand new because it happens every single day. It's a new shadow every single day, but it always has the same form. And so it's like, I'm looking at the Grand Canyon and feeling all of this sense of permanence because it's all stone. And yet, what is the Grand Canyon other than and a powerful illustration of the waste of time, right? As it chisels
Very
into even the
cool.
rock can't stand it.
And it's a void, right? Like almost like what
It's
the
an
thing that
inside out mountain
defines,
range.
yeah, man, it's like the thing that defines what this is space. Like,
Yeah,
and that
emptiness.
says something interesting too, right? About, we've talked about road time and we've talked about road space, I think, but I think that's an interesting image of it.
Yeah, I love that. Oh yeah, man. Something funny. I got on this when you were talking about the road and the wheels and stuff degrading. I had this realization about a week ago, that the roads in America are currently the best they will be, for the rest of our natural lives.
Oh, yeah,
Like we're
probably.
in the You're like looking at him being like, oh man, somebody's got to fix this road. And it just hit me. It's like, no one's coming to fix the road. You know, like this is what we got, where we're in the state of, you know, it's these are becoming the Roman roads. The American highway system is going back to whatever it was before, and it probably was already a road. A bunch of these roads, we think there might have actually been great roads already on the nation, so on the continent.
Well, that's how I feel about the routes versus highways. So like, and this is something I get on a lot,
Okay.
but like the route system, and the US highways are a lot more like flowing with the land, like, and you know, natural communities like grew up around them, and there was all these like really cool eclectic like roadside attractions and almost like this really interesting tradition that sprung up a lot of these places. You know, obviously Route 66 is going to be the most famous, but it's like that a lot of places where you'll take these routes and you're like, oh man, this was really nice and flowing. Like it feels good. It feels like people have been traveling on this thing for forever. But then you'll take an interstate and it's like it cuts through the land, it divides, it blows through a mountain. It is designed basically for military deployment. And, you know, obviously there's some logistic stuff there too, but we could argue that those are the same thing in this country. You know, and
For sure.
it's like a supply chain thing. And so the interesting thing, the difference there is really interesting to me. And I think that, you know, when those interstates were built, they basically like the arbitrary, or maybe it was arbitrary, maybe it wasn't, but the designation actually like doomed communities, because if like if you're not on that, then you're screwed, you know what I mean? And like it kind of shifted things and moved things away from a more natural. So maybe it'll go back to being a little more, I don't know, one
A
can
little bit
hope.
more in the flow and the natural form of the land. I'd say it reminds me of yeah, I'm a big Thomas Pynchon fan. Mason and Dixon, they talk about this, so Mason and Dixon meet a they meet a feng shui practitioner who has come to the New World for whatever reason, and they're pretty far into making the line, right? Because so they're making the Mason-Dixon line, they're talking to the feng shui guy, and he's like, "Don't you guys understand what is happening? They're projecting an evil straight line onto the natural flow of this land, right? They're cutting us a they're cutting a perfectly straight line into it." It's like, which is interesting. I mean, some of the highways, some of the interstates absolutely feel like that. A lot of them do. Some of them also, I don't know, in some places it's a little bit hard to tell. It's like if you look at it on the map, you can see it's just cutting right through. There are also parts, I mean, you know, like I-40 now is one of the interstates I know the best, and part of that is historic 66. So like there are parts of it where you'll see banking turns for inter you know, it's like you're not sure why we're turning and banking. And it probably was following an old route, or there's a long-term change in the land that it's preparing for, especially as the land opens up out west. But at the same time, we have to ask ourselves, if we are relating to spirits of the road, what are they going to be like if they've been called into existence, or if they've been attracted to this hard rectilinear form? When they would presumably be born of land spirits, which are going to be all, bioformative, or you know, at least have a more natural fractal based form to them.
Yeah, it makes me wonder that too. And you know, you again, the military intentions. It's like, okay, road rage, you know?
Yeah, that's fascinating that we're using this martial response system, and so of course people get pissed on it.
Dude, because there's
That's
times when you can
funny.
feel it moving on the road. Like, I don't know if you have this experience, but I definitely do. And I had it a lot when I was delivering like DoorDash and stuff in Atlanta too. Like some days it was like, this is smooth as baby shit. Like this is gravy, right? And then some days it was like, I feel the spirit of rage moving on these roads, you know, like where it's like it's palpable. I can feel it.
Oh yeah. Yeah, there've been I've felt the rage. I have felt daredevil presence on some
Ooh,
roads as
yeah,
well.
very much
You
so.
know, part of that is I have OCD, but like other than that, there's also like, you know, like I mean there will be intrusive thoughts, but then also you'll feel at times you're like, "Oh wow, something has been making people drive insane right on this part of the road."
Yeah.
You know. And then you'll go back and check, and there's been an accident site there or something. So that's really interesting. I've also noticed. Okay, so this is a little bit of a different take. I feel like we are in a time of resentment and repressed expression, in the sense of people self-repressing and avoiding confrontation. Avoiding confrontation in their personal lives or their professional lives. And that resentment, you know, tends to hold itself in as suppressed rage. And the road we experience as one of the most anonymous places, one of the most anonymous modes of existence, is being roadborne. And so like it comes out that way, right? And like I've noticed, because I spend so much time on the road, that I'll get rage from unexpected people over nothing, much more consistently than I ever would, just like through being in a, you know, it's like you hang out in a place where people are constantly complaining about shit. You're still not going to catch flack from them the same way you will if you're out on the road in a solid panel white van. You know, like
That's an interesting point, dude.
It's the physical, it is to the physical world what social media is to the digital world, right?
Oh, wow, dude. Yeah. So it's again air.
Well, it's the interface of air and stone, which is naturally tenuous and contentious.
So that's interesting because those two, okay. So like Mercury rules Gemini and
And
Virgo.
Virgo.
So you have the air and the earth coming together. There he is.
Which is, of course, very amusing for a conversation between two Tims, one of whom is a Gemini sun and the other is a Virgo sun.
Yeah. And so you have a Gemini sun, right?
I
What's your
do, yes.
rising?
Libra.
Because I have Gemini rising, Virgo sun.
Okay, right. Okay,
So
nice, yes.
this time of year is like very good times.
Yeah, I love the Gemini season.
So you're extra airy. So it makes
Yeah,
sense.
I'm triple air.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
How's that?
I enjoy it, but man, it is sometimes it's hard to be understood, not for lack of expression or for poor faculty with words, but just because I'm way up in the airy realms, trying to bring bizarre phantasms down into the material, and that's just what I'm doing for lunch, you know, like
Hell yeah.
just always having to explain things and trying again and again to communicate. But I will say the thing I enjoy the most about it is okay, well, so here's just a better way of expressing it. So I just finished listening to Finnegan's Wake, and this was my second time, and the first time was a few months ago. Well, the first time was in December. I mean, I loved it. Like it's, I mean, of course, it's still Finnegan's Wake. Like I would hate to have to summarize anything for you know, for anyone. Without having the cheat sheet or anything like that, but like the intensity of the verbal profusion of it, and just like it's like this electric lightning explosion of words. And listening to I enjoy listening to Finnegan's Wake, because to some extent that is kind of what it feels like to be a triple air sign, that there's this constant, I mean, like internal Like, I didn't try to have interlocutors. I didn't ask for interlocutors, but I have interlocutors and lots of them, you know? And like, I don't even think of it as being spirit contact. It's not like it's not spirit contact, but I'm also just like, I've been in that shit for so long. I don't know really what the purpose of distinguishing an internal, you know, endogenous voice from some sort of external contact.
I think it's all a mixed bag too. Like personally, like I describe this again, I'm referencing an episode that, well, it'll be out, but I describe myself as a nightclub of spirits.
Nice.
You know what I mean? It's just like everyone's coming and going. There's things, you know, there's people hanging out, there's weird guys in the corner, like there's all kinds of shit going on. There's people
Yeah,
dancing, there's people getting really drunk, like and that seems to make sense to me. And yeah, I feel you though, where it's like, bro, it's like the way I describe Gemini to people, it's like people can often think that we're two-faced, but it's not that. There's just five of me. Like, and that can be difficult, I think, sometimes for people to like deal with, because they, I don't know. And I think nowadays too, maybe it's more so. I don't know.
So, like, it's an interesting comparison, I think, between Taurus and Gemini here. One, because Taurus and Gemini are the most interesting pair of opposites. Well, whether or not they're the most interesting, they are a very interesting pair of opposites in the zodiac, and of course they're right next to each other. Taurus being fixed earth and Gemini being mutable air. And they get along very well, like somewhat unpredictably. Taurus and Gemini tend to get along very well. Taurus is known for the horseshoe, right? For hitting as I hit my mic, for hitting both extremes of the same spectrum, right? So like you'll if a Taurus if a Taurus person goes back to church, has like a spiritual revival, you could just wait, because they will find some way to feel like a bad boy again. They have to. They cannot just be on the good end of the spectrum. They have to. They're going to get a motorcycle, or they're going to start like making whiskey or something. They have to hit both extremes. Now, to me, that seems more like a duality than what we attribute to Gemini. But the Gemini with the two-facedness, I think, is more that it is aspecious. It's we have we're aspected, and we're multifaceted, right? And those facets play together. And on the inside of the Gemini, it makes perfect sense. But the problem is, Gemini will express the contradiction point blank without establishing any of the connection. And so when you suddenly, I'm trying to think of a good example of something. Okay, well, so here's one. I choose to spend as much time in the wilderness as possible. My place is on the trail. I love lakes, the mountains. This is like my life. It's even in my name, like, you know, like Woody. I'm a person of the forest. And if I'm gonna go live in a city, it needs to be of a certain size. Like, it has to be bigger than a certain size. And I would prefer, if I'm gonna be in a city, I would prefer one like Chicago or LA, right? Like, complete opposite. Now, I can explain that, because I'm like, something has to entice me out of the forest. And there has to be th things that I want in the city. And there are things that I, you know, like I did live on in Chicago. I was van lifing in Chicago last year, because there are things in Chicago that I want that draw me out of the forest. But if I'm in the city and I'm talking to people, I'm like, oh, you know, I'm a wilderness backpacker. I, you know, I love camping. Like, what the fuck are you doing in Chicago? You know, so that's like the two-facedness. It kind of reminds me a little bit, just for a metaphor to kind of bring us back around to the mountain. Something I've been really enjoying thinking about the mountain with is like, I think we might have talked about this last time we were hanging out, that the mountain cannot be viewed in its entirety. You cannot know the face of a mountain without seeing from all vantage points of the mountain at the same time, because the mountain is a 360 degree. The mountain's face is 360 degrees in a way that other faces are not. And also the mountain will not move itself to let you, like, you know, of course my head, my body has 360 degrees, but you can very quickly circle me or have me do a, you know, you can ogle me very easily if you are so inclined. With a mountain, the south face and the north face, or better yet, the south face and the east face are different mountains. They look different, right? And it's not until circling the thing or flying around it in a helicopter, right, that you understand the face of the mountain. And once you know it, from the different faces, you understand how they work together. Mount Whitney is a great example that from the western side of Mount Whitney and the eastern side of Mount Whitney, the Cathedral Rock looks quite different. Different enough that at first you're like, wait, is that Whitney? And then eventually you go up to the top, or like traverse a part of it, and you get enough of a sense of how it hangs together. Mount Hood, which I was just on, and of course you were got to enjoy some hood views recently as well. It's got the hood, right? It's got the little, I assume that's why it's called Mount Hood. I don't actually know that. The original name is Y East. But the southern face, it's completely differently shaped. It does not have the little hump. So I'm not saying all mountains are Gemini. and indeed, a mountain is pretty much the opposite of a Gemini. But I don't know. I enjoy the metaphor.
Hell yeah, I can dig it. That's interesting that you said, dude, you unlocked something to me about Taurus, which is where my moon is.
Okay.
And I was like, oh, shit, you just made something make sense to me about myself that I never understood before.
Nice.
He just described it. You know what I mean? And yeah, of course, it's cool. In my 12th house, so of course I just only noticed it now.
Right. It's been hiding away.
Yeah. So, yeah, that's interesting. Dude, before we kind of get going here, do you want to talk a little bit about your website and like where people can find you and like what you offer and go through that?
Yeah, cool. So my fortune telling business is Country Gentleman Fortune Telling. I offer card readings through that. I really specialize in card reading, tarot, poker card, Lenormand, Fournier. I have read with Uno cards before, but I don't offer that on the site necessarily.
Rad.
So Country Gentleman Fortune Telling, the website is cgfortunetelling.com. If you go to the website, you can either book a session with me, like a Zoom, you know, a virtual session. If you're currently in the Pacific Northwest, we can talk about, you know, meeting up in person as well. But then also my website links over, my blog is there. There's not much there because I need to get my ass in gear, do some of this writing backlog. There's also a link to my Etsy store where I sell individual question readings, and you get a PDF document. I might be switching also to do audio for that. That's probably the fastest way. That is definitely the fastest way. If you have a question that's burning inside of you and you've read your own cards and you're sick of reading your own cards and you don't know what the hell to do, or you just want to have someone read cards for you, if it's not that serious, that's a really fast way. It's within 24 hours, you'll get the document back. It'll probably be within a few hours, depending on my connectivity situation. So if you need a really fast turnaround, that's the way to go. Or you can schedule a Zoom session with me, and that'll just have to kind of be by calendar availability. In a Zoom session, you can really go a lot deeper. You can do multiple questions and get more of a systematic kind of approach in place.
Nice, dude. Anything else you want to mention?
Well, I'll have music coming out eventually. I'm working on some music projects at the current moment. One of them is a pretty big tune, we'll say. So I'm hoping to release those things soon. I'm going to be getting my video production stuff up and running. I've captured a lot of footage on the road. I just need to still process it and start putting it up. But you can, of course, find me on the Instagram, Timothy, class, Country Gentleman Fortune Telling. I've changed that Instagram so many times.
Yeah.
Timothy Neil Woody is my Insta, where you can see adventure stuff and music stuff. And at some point I'll have a YouTube for these adventure travel stuff, but that'll you know, I can link to that through the website if they want you to find me there.
And we can do this again and talk about all that stuff, like as you have that coming, because
that'd be great.
Know,
yeah
yeah yeah definitely, man. Thank you so much for coming on, dude. I had a great time talking to you.
I did too, man. This was great. It's great.
Hell yeah, man. You enjoy the rest of your day, and we will talk again soon.
Sounds good, man. Hey, you too.
Do you experience weird shit? Do your parents not like to tell their friends about what you do in the woods? Do you make more friends in a graveyard than you do at a party populated by living humans? Do you have interactions with beings that are not strictly considered human? Do other people look at you like you're crazy when you mention talking to trees in casual conversation? If you fist pumped or even just answered yes to any of these questions, you may be a nightbird. So let's sing together. If you'd like to come on the show and flap your gums with me, share your stories, or just talk about the malleable nature of reality for a while, then send me an email at tim@nightbirdpodcast.com. That's tim@nightbirdpodcast.com. I'd love to have you on the show. But until then, I gotta fly. But before I go, let me say this. Remember, you are never alone. I believe you.